You're now listening to the College Hotline Podcast with your host, John Wilmer.
Welcome to the College Hotline, the inaugural College Hotline, new podcast focusing on Pac-12, college football, other college issues. This is John Wilmer, my first guest today, Anthony Slater, new Bay Area News Group Warriors beat writer. Welcome, Anthony. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, you're going to have a lot more prestigious college football guests as this season goes on, I'm sure. But I'm glad to be a part of the first one, the test run, to talk a little college football. I know I cover the NBA, but, you know, it's a sport I definitely love. It's got an interesting, just the season is so interesting in college football, kind of how it plays out, how every week really is so important. Whereas, you know, I cover the NBA and you're in mid-January in Minnesota, and it's just, it doesn't feel as important as, you know, some of the other games.
No, that's for sure. Anthony has a unique perspective because he's from the Bay Area, correct? Sonoma?
Yep.
But he has lived in Big 12 country, so I think he's got a good view for the, maybe the difference in levels of passion between some of the teams in the Plains States and out west.
Yeah, I mean, and I didn't realize it. You know, I went to Sonoma State for my first couple of years, and I've been around, so I watched college football a little bit, and, you know, growing up, and, you know, Cal, Stanford, some Pac-12, and just countrywide. But when I got dropped in, this would have been, what, August of 2010 into Oklahoma, you know, I went to Oklahoma State, which is in Stillwater. I remember their first game was against Washington State in Stillwater, and they killed them. And Kendall Hunter had like six touchdowns, and it was Justin Blackman's first big game, Brandon Whedon, and like, you know, 60,000, everyone was so into it, the tailgating and just with everything. It was wild, and it, you know, it really opened my eyes to college football, and I kind of came to love the sport. I remember going to what it would have been a number 7 versus number 8 Oklahoma State versus Texas A&M game in College Station. I don't know if you've ever been to College Station, but man.
I haven't, but I have heard it's a tremendous atmosphere.
Oh, man. And this was like an ABC 2:30 kickoff. They had I remember sitting in the press box, they had a little paper that said, "Do not be alarmed, it's not an earthquake." But the press box will shake, you know, rather violently about, you know, 5 minutes before kickoff, because the entire crowd, you know, one row grabs each other's shoulders and goes this way, the other one goes that way. And it looks like the entire stadium is, like, going through a massive earthquake. It's kind of crazy, and the press box is shaking. So, long story short, yeah, I have been ingrained in Big 12 football for a little bit. And that's not even what the SEC is either.
No, that's true. What's your sense for the reason for the difference in passion? You know, you hear a lot about how folks who live in out west, they have so many things to do. The weather's great. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in Northern California, you go to Tahoe, Yosemite on for the weekend. Do you think is it that simple, or is there something more to the deep-seated passion that you find in the South and the Midwest when it comes to football?
Well, yeah, I think that's a good deal of it is that, but just, I don't know, the small-town feel when, I don't know, there's just something about even going out to like an Oklahoma high school football game, because I've had to, you know, doing interns and stuff, I had to cover some Oklahoma high school, or even go down to Texas at times, and just like the passion within the communities about this team.
The Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, exactly. And that just kind of, you know, it kind of, people grow up with it, and it's just like a football type culture, the tailgating, the weather. It's not that people out here don't like football and enjoy the game, and there's like interesting parts of the game, but there it's like, it's a lifestyle, and it's hard to explain unless you've kind of lived in it, but it's just, it overtakes falls. It really does, where everyone's thinking about it, everyone's talking about it, and it shows on Saturdays.
Is the, that, you know, everybody knows Oklahoma State is Bedlam, but what's it like within the state that week? Is it just, you know, everybody is an enemy at that point, kind of like you hear with Alabama and Auburn?
Yeah, it's kind of been interesting with, like, the integration of the Thunder into the state, because it's like suddenly you have OU and OSU fans who now like the same teams at times. But then, yeah, during that week, it's – especially because since I've been there, it's, you know, there was a long period where it's such a lopsided rivalry where OU's just killing Oklahoma State. all the time and have always been better. But, you know, over the last decade or so, while OU's won more games, it's just more competitive where they're both ranked. Yeah, it can get wild within the state. And it's really not just a one-week thing. It's an all-year thing. I mean, you see, you know, office rivalries and bumper stickers, house divided. I don't know how many house divided license plate things you see in that state. But, you know, the weird thing with OSU, it's really big. Going to Oklahoma State, it's like, oh, the Bedlam week. To where OU, there's like three or four of those weeks per season. It's even bigger. You know, Red River rivalry is even bigger to them than Oklahoma State, because they kind of have this, you know, Oklahoma State kind of has this inferiority complex to OU, and OU just kind of has this big brother, like, oh, well, we're just going to beat them again. Whereas Texas, although the truth is, I mean, Oklahoma State's been a better program than Texas for the last maybe five or so years, but still, the Red River rivalry game, I think, in OU fans' minds, is a bigger week than Bedlam.
Interesting. You know, there's no conference quite like the Big 12 in that Texas dominates that league, maybe not on the field, but in every other aspect, Texas is such a dominant force.
Longhorn Network.
You don't have that with even the SEC, the Pac-12, Big Ten. It's a little bit more egalitarian in those conferences, and I think that whole the disparity between Texas and everyone else has just caused so much frustration in that league for so many years, and could end up being the death of it eventually.
Yeah, no doubt, and I think Longhorn Network kind of is the crux of all of that, and it's a problem now. And you know, it just seems like they got just people pulling different ways, and the fact that I know of late, they recently they kind of have equally shared the revenue, but you know that it wasn't always like that. I think that's what led to that's why A&M left, and that's why Missouri left, and Colorado, Nebraska. I mean, you had these. They would love to have A&M or Missouri back. Now you hear some of the teams that are talking about going out and trying to get like Colorado. Or, I mean, I call it Memphis, Cincinnati, Houston, maybe BYU. I know there's been talk, but it's just it's an unhealthy conference right now. Even though I mean, it's competitive in pretty much every sport. It's a very good conference, but I just think the leadership and where it is up top is not in a good place. And as you mentioned, I think that's because of Texas and just kind of how they try to rule everything.
Yes, absolutely. It is awfully competitive on the field, though. Who do you like this year?
OU's kind of I think has the most coming back, and I mean, you know how important the quarterback position is, and they have a Heisman contender coming back in Baker Mayfield. So I'd say they're obviously the favorites. You know, Texas is still down, which has kind of been a surprise. Baylor's going through so much. You know, they have some talent, and they probably will be good, but it's just the situation that they're in, obviously, with Briles out. That's kind of tough for the conference overall. There's some, like, TCU's solid. Oklahoma State, I think, should have a good year. They have another returning QB with Mason Rudolph. But to me, OU is the clear favorite. The question is, will OU enter conference play with one loss, zero losses, or two losses? Because they got Houston in Ohio State, two out of the first 3 weeks.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a connection for Bay Area fans with Oklahoma in that Baker Mayfield started his career at Texas Tech with Davis Webb, who's going to be the starter for Cal. Both guys end up leaving Tech eventually. They also had Michael Brewer, who played at Virginia Tech. All three of those guys were on the Tech roster at the same time. All three of them ended up leaving. I know Cal is hoping that Davis Webb will help fill the void left by Jared Goff. Maybe he's not quite Baker Mayfield's caliber. We'll see. But he certainly is a well-regarded quarterback and is going to be one of the most interesting stories in the Pac-12 this year.
Yeah, I think he really fits the offense that Cal's trying to run because, that's where he came from. Tech kind of runs that spread. So I think that's good. Davis Webb, I remember I went to one of his first games. They played at Oklahoma State on like a Thursday night. I think he's pretty good. I mean, he's clearly, they got him in to start. He's going to start right away. I mean, there's some questions of if that's the healthiest way to kind of, run your quarterback system, where you're just kind of plucking in these one-year grad transfers. But I think he'll be huge this year. What do you think as far as, I saw you had Cal at about 6-6, especially with some losses late in the year. What do you think about their offense just overall? What's Sonny Dykes' job security right now?
Well, right now it's pretty good. You know, he signed a two-year extension last winter, so he's got 4 years left. They were encouraged by what happened last season, getting to a bowl game. That was a big hurdle for them. The next step for him is to get what I think a lot of Cal fans would call a signature victory. You know, he has not beaten Stanford, Oregon, USC, or UCLA yet. This is his fourth year. I think Cal would really like to see them clear that hurdle. But his job security right now is pretty set. And look, they, you know, 6 months ago, Jared Goff leaves, and everybody for Cal was going to be kind of back to where they were two seasons ago, and bringing in Davis Webb has really transformed the enthusiasm and the outlook for Cal this season. They should be very competitive. I'm not sure they can quite compete for the North title, but they're not going to be the bottom of the conference by any stretch this year.
Yeah, they went from one win to 5 wins to 8 wins. So, like, if you're thinking of the progression of Sonny Dykes, you want to get 8, 9, 10 this year, but that doesn't seem that likely. So what's a successful good season for Cal this year?
I think if they could get back to a bowl game, that would be absolutely a success, just given the fact that they had to replace Jared Goff and they lost their top six receivers. Some of their best players on defense are gone. They would be, I think Cal fans would be pretty darn happy with 6-6. The question, you know, going forward would be, is Dykes going to ever get them to the next level where they're winning 9 or 10 and they're competing for the North title, or is, you know, have they basically found their level here, as a 5, 6, 7 win team under Dykes? It'll be interesting to see. They're dealing with you know, multiple issues. It's not just replacing Goff, but from a bigger picture, they have implemented tougher admission standards with the goal of improving their APR, improving their graduation rates. But those higher admission standards, you know, that shrinks the pool of players that you can recruit from, and it's forced them to expand and recruit more nationally. And, you know, Dykes and his staff have a lot of connections in the Southern Plains and the Southeast, and they're trying to pull players from there. Demetrius Robertson, 5-star receiver. Yeah. From Georgia, they're hoping he can make a big impact. You know, Webb is another example of them going out and getting somebody from a different part of the country. They certainly can't lose the L.A. Basin as their foundation for recruiting, but they definitely are going to have to look more national, kind of like Stanford, look a little bit more national now that they have got a higher admissions bar they're going to need to clear.
Yeah. You mentioned Demetrius Robertson. I mean, do you expect, just from talking to people around there, I mean, I know they're replacing, like, their entire wide receiver core, basically. Do you think he can come in and, like, be a big-time playmaker right away? I mean, it's a lot of times these 5-star guys come in and the fan base wants him to, but it might take a year or two.
Yeah, I think he'll contribute. You know, they have a different group of receivers this year. I mean, first of all, they're four deep at four different receiver spots. It's almost half the roster's receivers. But, you know, they've got a good mix of size and speed. I think what's a little different this year with Robertson and Stovall is they've got guys that are a little bit more of the catch-and-run style rather than just the Kenny Lawler, you know, great hands, great in tight windows. But these are guys that you get them a little bit of space and they should be able to turn a 10-yard slant into a 30- or 40-yard gain. It will just be a matter of them being able to, you know, execute, get the ball there, having the offensive line protect Webb. They certainly have not been great protecting. Goff got beat up a lot. And they're going to need to run the ball. As Sonny Dykes himself said, they're going to need to run the ball when everybody in the stadium knows they're going to run. It's third day. It's, you know, it's October. It's an important game. They're on the road. You know, it's 3rd and 3 in the third quarter and a close game. You got to be able to convert in those situations if you're going to be a top level team. They haven't been able to do that so far. We'll see. Maybe it'll be different this year. Their offensive line should be better. So it'll matter whether they can execute.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've gone pretty far on Cal, who you have at 6-6, middle of the conference. So I kind of wanted to maybe talk about some of these other teams. You actually have you're at Washington winning it, right?
I did pick Washington. I was one of the first, and I may regret that come early November.
What's got you worried?
Well, you know, it's just the North is going to be a very difficult division, one of the best divisions with the, you know, the Big Ten East, SEC West, Pac-12 North. You know, a big question about Washington is how are they going to handle their new role? I mean, they have been a second-tier team for many years now. So for everybody on the roster, hype is new, expectations are new, success would be new, and that's a big part of it for an up-and-coming team is how do you handle the role of being hunted instead of hunter? And you need leadership for sure. You need depth. You need good coaching. I think we know they have good coaching with Chris Peterson. They've got a returning quarterback in Jake Browning, which is puts them Washington and Washington State both have an edge on Stanford and Oregon in that regard. I just like Washington. I think their defense is talented. They got a veteran line, a good coach, veteran quarterback, and it's also uncertainty about Oregon and Stanford with the quarterback play. Oregon is relied on the FCS transfers now for a second consecutive year, and if Prukup can be as good as Adams was, they'll be okay. But so far, I think that there's reason to be skeptical about the Ducks.
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned Jake Browning. To me, you know, like you said, Chris Peterson, you know they're going to be well coached. They're deep and experienced on defense. You almost can pencil that in, like, okay, they're going to be really good defensively. Is Browning the key to, in his development, the key to, like, if this is just, I don't know, a solid 9-3 type team or potentially Pac-12 winner trying to compete for a CFP?
I think probably he's the difference. He's got to stay healthy, which he couldn't do last year, and part of that's obviously protection. But he's a sophomore. He played, you know, got a lot of experience last year, and he should be, you know, relative to the teams they're competing with, he's got them in a good spot. You know, Miles Gaskin's a very good tailback that gives them the threat of big plays out of the running game. But the offense is going to be the big question for them. They have one of the best defenses in the conference for sure. They are loaded on every level on defense. It's going to be, can they move the ball consistently against the top level teams? When they need a touchdown, when they need a field goal, when they need to eat up the clock, are they going to be able to do that? That's kind of the next step for Browning.
You have Washington at 10, which is your highest-ranked Pac-12 team. The AP has Stanford at 8 as their highest rank. You have them at 13, so you're a little bit, more down on Stanford than I guess maybe most voters. You got them at 9-3, losses to Washington, UCLA, Notre Dame. Is it just the QB, just kind of the uncertainty around that? Because, you know, they obviously got McCaffrey, and they're just obviously well-coached too.
Yeah, no, it's QB offense. They got three new starters on the offensive line. I think that they'll be ultimately they'll be fine there. The quarterbacks, they have two guys who have got some skill, big strong arm, mostly pocket passers. Neither of them has really gained any separation, and I would be very surprised if they don't go with both players in their opener against Kansas State just to see who reacts better. When the lights are on, I think the thing that I really considered in determining where to rank Stanford, both in the Pac-12 and also in my AP poll, was the combination of the rebuilt line and a new quarterback with their schedule. I think they have the toughest first half schedule of any team in the country. They got four ranked teams in their first six games, and that doesn't even include Washington State, which is kind of a bubble, you know, also receiving votes kind of team. So they have got five big challenges in their first six games, and when you add in the new quarterback and the new line, would typically those positions take a few weeks to improve communication and efficiency. I just thought the combination of the schedule and the newness at those key positions was going to cause them a few hiccups. But I also think that once they get to the middle of the season, they are going to start rolling and they'll probably end up, as one of the hottest teams in the country.
Their rise has been, it's been about a lot of things, but QB play has obviously been the biggest. Andrew Luck to Kevin Hogan. Which of these QBs do you think has the chance to be a, steady, really good college player?
Well, I think they both could. Keller Chris probably has a little bit more raw talent, especially in terms of mobility, than Ryan Burns does. Burns has been there another year. I think he may have a little bit better grasp of the offense. I think they both could end up, whichever one ultimately wins the job, could end up being a real good player. Nobody knew 4 years ago Kevin Hogan was going to end up being the kind of college player he was. He was third string, essentially, when training camp began and didn't become a starter till November of his redshirt freshman year. Then he ends up winning three league titles. That could happen again. It's tough to picture right now, but that's the way those things go. I think that push comes to shove, you usually go with the younger guy. If it gets to the point where David Shaw needs to decide which is his starter and it's real close, I would guess he'd go with Keller Chris just because Chris has got one more year over on Burns.
Okay, let's go to you got kind of the tiers. You got Washington and Stanford up there maybe as the favorites in the conference, and then right beyond that is probably UCLA, Oregon, USC as this next tier. How do you view these three? You kind of sounded a little bit down on Oregon. Maybe, I don't know if you want to rank the three, but where do you kind of see their seasons going?
I would probably put UCLA as the third best of that group. Washington, Stanford, UCLA, SC, Oregon. I'm just not sold on the Oregon quarterback situation. And their defense, which I think will be better with Brady Hoke in charge, the former Michigan head coach. I think they'll be better, but they have a long way to go because they have been awful the last few years. I think that, UCLA, I give them the edge on SC, partly because the quarterback, Josh Rosen is arguably the most talented quarterback in the country, regardless of his class, and he's a true sophomore. USC's problem is the schedule. Now, I said Stanford had the hardest first half schedule in the country. SC has got the toughest schedule overall. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. Alabama to start the season, Notre Dame to end the season. Plus, they play Washington, they play Oregon, they play Stanford, they play UCLA. I mean, it is brutal. And You're going into that with a new quarterback. Their defensive line had a big blow in spring practice when Kenny Bigelow, their top lineman, went out with an ACL, and he's not going to be back this season. You got some questions about the defensive line. Quarterback, ridiculous schedule, absolutely ridiculous. So I think that SC could end up being, I think I call them, best 7-5 team in the country. It's going to be hard for them. It's going to be hard for them to do much better than that because the schedule is so tough. But then you look at the personnel. Obviously, they got players. They're SC. They got players. So we'll see how Clay Helton kind of navigates the ship here in his first full year as a permanent coach.
Yeah, I'm looking at Alabama, as you mentioned, one, but the end with four ranked teams, man.
It's nuts. And the Pac-12, the Pac-12 does, they get together with their TV partners, and they backload the schedule. The Big 12 did this too last year. Nobody plays anybody for the first 2 months. Now, the difference this year is Stanford plays SC and UCLA back-to-back in September, and those will be very and then Washington. Those will be very telling games. But for the most part, most of the best Pac-12 games are in November. And, sure, that makes for great viewing. It sweeps week. Everybody's paying attention to college football. But you also position yourself for a little too much eating your own, and that can hurt you when it comes playoff time.
Yeah, look at this. USC doesn't play Oregon State, which is, that's usually your automatic win. And there are other, besides Alabama and Notre Dame, they play Utah State, which it is probably most likely a win, but that's not the easiest of, if that's going to be your easiest game on the schedule, that's not the easiest of the easy. So
absolutely not. And that game is between Alabama and Stanford, so that is the ultimate trap game. You're playing, yeah. You got two powerhouses on each end, and you're playing a team that is better than the name would suggest. So that'll be very interesting too.
Yeah. Okay. So then the bottom tier of the conference, kind of, you know, teams we haven't talked about: Washington State, Utah, Arizona State, Colorado, Oregon State. Obviously, there's different expectations levels with these teams. Who do you kind of identify as maybe a sleeper who's going to have a better season than people think, and then maybe a team you think is going to disappoint?
Well, disappoint. My pick to disappoint the Pac-12 is Arizona State. They're coming off of a six-win season. They're on a little bit of a downslide. They have no quarterback whatsoever. I'm not convinced ASU is gonna be able to play, you know, at a mid-level rate during the season. I have them finishing last in the South. You know, Utah always well coached and very good on the lines of scrimmage, and that should be the same this year. Question for the Utes is quarterback play. They got a transfer from Washington named Troy Williams. If he can give them some consistency there, they'll contend for the South. I mean, they certainly can hold up on the lines of scrimmage with anybody in the conference. And in the North, you know, I think Washington State is going to be nipping at the heels of the contenders. And frankly, I wouldn't be that surprised if Washington State ends up being in the North race down into the last couple weeks of the season. You know, they beat UCLA last year. They beat Oregon. They've got Luke Falk, a very good returning quarterback. They're better on the lines of scrimmage than they've been, thanks to Mike Leach's recruiting. So I could see Washington State contending in the North. North could be up in the air. Who knows? Oregon could win it. Any of four teams could win the North. I think there's only one team that's going to finish last in the North, and that's Oregon State. That's a major rebuilding job for Gary Anderson.
Mike Leach has quietly done a really good job there. I mean, you wouldn't expect it to be quiet because he's Mike Leach and he's kind of got this big name, but I don't think people realize what he's kind of turned that program around.
He has. He's done a good job. You know, Washington State you've got to rely on some junior college transfers there. He's playing the system that is going to be best suited for the kind of players he can recruit. It's a system that, you know, the air raid he made famous at Texas Tech. And, you know, getting back to Texas Tech, there's this big circle here: Leach, Sonny Dykes, Cliff Kingsbury, quarterback, Jake Spavital, is there, and then Sonny Dykes ends up hiring Jake Spavital, who's close with Kingsbury. Talk Davis Webb into going to Cal from Texas Tech. It all circles back.
Yeah. All right. Let's go quickly to your national poll, because you're kind of one of the. As a voter, you kind of get, I don't know, what would you call it, scrutiny, or you do your voting process a bit differently, a bit probably more in-depth than a lot of other AP voters. And you were, I think you're the only person with Ohio State as number one this year?
I think that's right, yeah. There's a couple of teams that only have one, that only got one first-place vote. LSU might have been one as well, but I was definitely the only person with Ohio State.
What is, why? Why'd you go with them?
Well, I pick... My preseason poll is based on how I think it's going to finish, and I kind of like Ohio State to win the national title. You know, they did lose a ton of players to the NFL, but I think Urban Meyer showed 2 years ago that he is working on his own timetable. He had a young team then. They matured during the course of the season. They got better. They were playing their best at the end of the year, and I could see them following a similar arc this season. They have experience. The one position you got to have it, which is quarterback with JT Barrett. We know he's recruited terrific. You know, they got five-star guys everywhere, future draft picks everywhere. So it's just a matter of those guys maturing quickly enough. And I think that the chemistry and focus issues that maybe they had a little last year, I don't think they'll have that problem this season. I think they'll be back. They'll be hungry after missing the playoff. And so Meyer will have their full attention all season. And that Oklahoma game in week three will be just critical. I think if Ohio State can get through Norman, they will just keep building momentum through the Big Ten season and really be difficult to beat come playoff time.
Yeah, that's going to be a very interesting game. I know OU's they've renovated their stadium a little bit. They've closed in the bowl. It's got, I think, about 100,000 will be there. AP has OU right now at 3. They're highest ranked team in the Big 12. You actually have them at 11. I think it's one of the biggest disparities between you and the AP. Why are you down on OU?
You know, I just part of it's a schedule. You know,
sure.
They got Houston. They could lose. They could lose Ohio State. I think TCU is going to be – they're my pick to win the Big 12. I just think Gary Patterson's such a good coach, and he's got a ton of guys back, which could be the best defense in the Big 12, if not the country. You know, and TCU was just ripped with injuries last year, and that kind of thing tends to revert to the mean. So you would think that they would have pretty good success with the health. I started off thinking, you know, TCU is my pick to win the Big 12, so they were my highest ranked team from that conference. When I evaluated Oklahoma, I thought that they would come out of the season with a few losses, partly because of the schedule. So that's kind of where they ended up where they did.
Yeah, your college football playoff does not include a Pac-12 team, just because, as you mentioned earlier, you put your poll as what you kind of expect the season to play out like. But you have, Washington at 8 is your highest ranked Pac-12, or at 10 is your highest ranked Pac-12 team. So, like, you're very low on potentially a Pac-12. It would be the second straight season Pac-12 might not.
It would, yeah. It would probably cause some panic out west, too. Calls for playoff expansion. I think the league is very good at the top, you know, 5-6 deep. But I just don't know that anybody is playoff caliber. And part of the reason is that, you know, you always start with the quarterback. And the two teams, really the three teams that you first two as playoff contenders, SC, Stanford, Oregon, all have new quarterbacks. And so if you are going to project a Pac-12 team into the playoff, you either need to take a leap of faith with those schools and their new quarterbacks, or you need to take a leap of faith that a Washington, UCLA, or Washington State is going to make a sizable jump up in level of success to go from, you know, winning 7, 8, 9 games to being a playoff contender. And I guess I couldn't make either of those leaps of faith. You know, it's easy. You look at Clemson and they got a quarterback coming back, Oklahoma quarterback returning, Ohio State, LSU. Those teams are talented teams with returning quarterbacks. Alabama is obviously the one team that has a new quarterback, but it's Alabama, and they get judged differently. So that's kind of how I came to my conclusion.
Yeah, and you mentioned it early, but the cannibalism aspect of it, where, I mean, it might not have the elite teams, but it's very deep. Whereas, you know, Ohio State has the tough early schedule, but might not have to deep into their conference play the toughest schedule.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, the Pac-12 definitely, with the way they schedule 9 conference games, and everybody's got at least one tough non-conference game, you know, they are more likely than any other league to produce a champion with 2 losses instead of 0 or 1, and that's a tougher road. You know, you look at Stanford, they got Notre Dame, Kansas State. SC's got Alabama and Notre Dame. UCLA's got Texas A&M and BYU. So that makes things a lot tougher for the Pac-12 to get that 0 or 1 loss champ, which is what you really need to have the inside track to the playoff.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, it's going to be a very interesting season, as they really all are these days. But I guess tell the people about the podcast. You're going to be popping out about once a week this season.
We're hoping to go weekly, starting with the beginning of the season. Guests who know the Pac-12 as well as anybody, and we will be coming out with more news on that as soon as possible.
Yeah, well, I'm excited for it. You know, you're about as connected as can be for a college football writer, so it should be a good addition to the Mercury News. And, you know, like I said, I'm excited.
I appreciate you Yeah, thanks for joining me.
No problem.